Hi, friends, and welcome to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha, where each week we share an idea in the Parsha and how it relates to Jewish history, along with the books and articles I've read over Shabbos to learn more about the topic. Reminder to sign up for our weekly Substack, readinghistoryintheparsha.substack.com, where you can get a write-up of our weekly class, along with all the links to the articles and books that I've discovered on my Shabbos reading journeys. Just a quick note, a lot of people have asked, I don't know what Substack is, I don't know what you're talking about. Substack is a platform that allows you to automatically email things out really quickly. It's not scary. It's basically just a weekly email, but it has all of the links to all of the sources that I quote. And if you type in readinghistoryintheparsha.substack.com, you can sign up there. It is not scary for those of you who are not familiar with Substack. And of course, thank you so much to our sponsors and friends, Janet and Lior Hode and family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. I am so grateful for your partnership and friendship over all these years. At long last, Yehuda confronts his brother Yosef. After being sold into slavery, exiled from his brothers, they are finally reunited. Yehuda confronts Yosef. And in one of the most moving scenes in the entire Torah, Yosef clears out the room of all of his advisors and finally reveals his identity to his brothers. I am Yosef, your brother, he says. Is our father still alive? Vayomer Yosef el achiv, ani Yosef. You have to read in the Hebrew because it's so epic. Ani Yosef ha'od avi chai. And then all of the moment, the brothers are so overwhelmed. The pasuk says, v'lo yachlu echlav lanos oso, ki nivhalu mipan. They were like dumbfounded. They were so overwhelmed, they couldn't even respond initially. But Yosef comforts them. Don't be distressed that you sold me into slavery, Yosef says. He's comforting his brothers. This was all part of the divine plan. It seems like a moving reconciliation. Everything's good now, right? Well, not quite. If you read the Torah carefully, and Rabbeinu Bechaya points this out, Yosef never formally forgives his brothers for selling him into slavery. Yes, they came together, and yes, Yosef hugs Binyamin and kisses his brothers, but there's no formal declaration of forgiveness. Like, is hugging it out enough? Rabbeinu Bechaya does not seem to think so. He writes later on in Parshas Vayechi, in the 50th Perek, Perek Nun, Pasuk Yud Zayin, the 50th chapter, the 17th verse, Rabbeinu Bechaya writes, Tekef shehizkiru lo aviv, once his father's mentioned this, bacha legodol ha'ava v'nimchuru rachama v'hine achav bikshu mimenu mechila, his brothers begged him for forgiveness, and says Rabbeinu Bechaya, v'lo be'er hakasav shemocha lahem, the Torah never explains that he actually granted them forgiveness. And even though Rabbeinu Bechaya says, v'yafal pi shehizkir hakasav v'yinachem osam v'yedaber alibam shenir b'zeh shehoy lahem ratzui, he's comforting them. It looks like there's a reconciliation. Still, mikol makom lo ra'inu, says Rabbeinu Bechaya, listen closely, lo ra'inu sheyizkor hakasav mechila b'Yosef. We never see once that Yosef formally granted them mechila, v'lo sheyoda lahem sheyisa pashem v'chatasam. And never do they formally like recognize and speak out all of the difficulty and the sins that the brothers caused against Yosef. Seemingly, according to Rabbeinu Bechaya, hugging it out is not, in fact, enough to grant forgiveness. Interestingly, Rashi, many centuries later, a millennia later, was asked this very question. In Tshuva's Rashi, in the 245th Tshuva, Reish, Mem, Hey, Rashi's asked a fascinating question. You can look that up there. And of course, I have a link to that Tshuva's Rashi in the Substack. Rashi writes that there is no greater form of reconciliation than giving a hug and a kiss. It's a beautiful language from Rashi. Rashi says, I'll just read the actual language of Rashi. Ulechabko ulenashko she'ein lecha mechila gedola mizu. If you hug and kiss, like, then you know that they've made up. They've fully reconciled. But in our Parsha, we kind of have this disagreement. This tension between Rabbeinu Bechaya and Rashi, the reconciliation between Yosef and his brothers, is kind of left ambiguous. There was a kiss, there was action, but no formal declaration. They acted in a conciliatory way towards one another, but as Rabbeinu Bechaya notes, Yosef's heart was not fully mended. Why is the denouement, I know that's a fancy word, I don't know why I used it just now, but I love it. Denouement is like the climax. Why is the denouement of this harrowing story so unclear? When will Yehuda's confrontation with Yosef finally be resolved? To understand this conclusion, let's explore two incidents that contributed to much of the enduring controversies surrounding the legacy of Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. the great Rav of Eretz Yisrael. He was born in the year 1865 and he died too soon in 1935. Rav Kook's vision for a redemptive reconciliation among all of the Jewish people was never fully realized. Instead, throughout his life, particularly after being appointed as the first chief rabbi of Palestine in 1921, he became a magnet for controversy. Rav Kook's life and legacy should never be reduced to the controversies that surrounded him, but in many ways there are a lens to better understand what he was trying to accomplish. Those looking for a more comprehensive yet accessible overview of his life, I would urge you to read Yehuda Mirsky's biography, part of the Yale Jewish Live series. It's absolutely fantastic. It's entitled Rav Kook, Mystic in a Time of Revolution. It is a phenomenal biography, very accessible, of Rav Kook. Yet even from the controversy and criticism directed at Rav Kook, one can appreciate his goals and dreams. Following a 1921 visit to the land of Israel, Rav Avraham Mordechai Alter, who was the second Rebbe of Ger, known as the Imre Emes, wrote a letter on his boat ride home reflecting on his meeting with Rav Kook. This is what he writes. The Harav Hagon, Rav Avraham Kook Sheyichya, who Isha Eshkolos, he's a Renaissance man, he's got all these interests. Isha Eshkolos Betorah Umidas Toromios Gam Rabim Omrim, and everybody says about him, Kuhu Sone Betza, he hates money. Ulam, and this is the criticism, Ahavaso Letzion, his love of Zion, Overes Kol Gvul, crosses all boundaries, V'omer Al Tamei Tahar Umar Lo Panem Ka'oso She'amru Chazal B'Perakama De'Erevin, referring to Rebbe Meir. He calls that which is impure, pure, and he is comparable to Rebbe Meir in the Mishnah, which is discussed in this first parak in Erevin, Al Mishalo Haya Bedoro Kamoso, there was like nobody like him, Umitam Zelo Nikva Halacha Kamoso, that it said about Rebbe Meir that he was so amazing, so brilliant, he was able to see past everything, all of the superficial, but that is actually why we don't accord halacha according to the opinion of Rebbe Meir. And in a kind of backwards compliment, the Imre Emes says something similar about Rav Kook, that although it's public knowledge that he loathes money, his love for Zion surpasses all limit, and he declares the impure pure, deliberately invoking this image of Rebbe Meir, one of the great sages of the Mishnah. The Imre Emes, while moved by Rav Kook's works, was concerned by his sensitivity to communal boundaries. As Bezalel Naor painstakingly details in his translation and commentary, it's amazing and is a wonderful introduction, his edition of Rav Kook's Orot, Rav Kook, throughout these controversies, evinced a noble tranquility of spirit. Theodore Herzl died on July 3rd, 1904 at the tragically young age of 44. He was never able to fully see the vision of the state of Israel that he had dreamt of. In one of the earliest controversies of Rav Kook's lifetime, he was asked to give a memorial service for Herzl. Herzl, of course, was not an observant Jew, though his contributions to Judaism and the Jewish people are, of course, enormous. Rav Kook, who was recently appointed the rabbi of Yaffa, was asked to offer words in this memorial service for Herzl. This kind of put Rav Kook in a tough spot. It was unusual for a rabbi of his stature to eulogize a thoroughly secular Jew, yet he also knew that refusing to give a eulogy would cause its own controversy. As again Bezalel Naor details in a different book, When God Becomes History, Historical Essays of Rav Avraham Isaac HaKohen Kook, a wonderful book, definitely worth reading, published by Kodesh, there was no satisfactory resolution. What should Rav Kook do? So instead, Rav Kook memorialized the spirit and mission of Herzl, but not once throughout the speech does he explicitly mention Herzl himself. Instead, he focuses on a prophecy of Zechariah about a future eulogy that would take place in Yerushalayim. And you can look up the prophecy of Zechariah is in the 12th chapter of Zechariah, and you can look over there at the 11th verse. It starts talking about this famous Hesped B'Yerushalayim, a eulogy in Jerusalem. The Talmud in Sukkah explains that Zechariah's prophecy was about the eulogy for the death of Mashiach ben Yosef, the Messiah, the son of Yosef. Rav Kook's eulogy for Herzl details his vision for Zionism couched in the personalities of Yehuda and Yosef. In Jewish tradition, we're told that there will be two messianic personalities, Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben Yehuda, each respectively, as Rav Kook explains in this memorial speech for Herzl, each respectively represents a different aspect necessary for redemption. Yosef is this universalist material success, providing for the entirety of the Jewish people in concert with world and political leadership, while Yehuda represents particularistic spiritual grandeur, the immersion in Torah and Torah values. As Rav Kook explains, and this translation is from Betzalel Na'or, since it is impossible for our nation to attain its lofty destiny other than by actualizing these two components, the universalist symbolized by Yosef and the particularist symbolized by Yehuda, there arise in the nation proponents of each aspect. Those who would enhance spirituality prepare the way for Mashiach ben David, whose focus is on the final destiny. Those who address the material, general aspects of life prepare the way for Mashiach ben Yosef. So was Rav Kook comparing Herzl to a Mashiach of sorts? Like, was he comparing him to Mashiach ben Yosef? So in a later letter that Rav Kook sent to his father-in-law, who was famous in his own right, Rav Eliyahu David Rabinowitz Teumim, known as the Aderet, he actually distanced himself explicitly from that interpretation, which obviously suggests that there were those who heard Rav Kook or found out about this speech and said, oh my goodness, Rav Kook just said that Herzl is Mashiach ben Yosef. Of course I spoke pleasantly and politely, Rav Kook writes to his father-in-law, the Aderes, recounting his eulogy for Herzl, but I did reveal the fundamental failure of their, referring to Zionism, entire enterprise, namely the fact that they do not place at the top of their list of priorities the sanctity of God and his great name, which is the power that enables Israel to survive. Rav Kook's vision for Zionism, on the other hand, required a union of both Yosef and Yehuda. It should be noted that Rav Kook was hardly the only serious rabbi to offer words memorializing Herzl's passing. Rav Avram Elio Kaplan, one of the most cherished students of the Alter Slabodka, published an essay entitled On Herzl. The essay is originally published in Hebrew. That's included in his work, Rav Avram Elio Kaplan's work, Be'ikvos HaYira. That work, by the way, was introduced to me by my Rebbe in Neri Yisrael, Rav Ezra Neuberger. Rav Ezra Neuberger, who I spoke to fairly recently, told me an amazing story between Rav Kook and the Altar of Slabodka, and he told me that the Altar of Slabodka, and he would know this, he has these traditions from his Rebbe and uncle, Rav Ruderman, who was himself a Talmud of the Altar of Slabodka, that Rav Avram Elio Kaplan was really one of the most treasured, if not the most treasured student of the Altar of Slabodka. This essay on Herzl that he publishes in Be'ikvos HaYira is an appreciation to Herzl for fostering Jewish pride among the Jewish people. Herzl taught us, Rav Avram Elio Kaplan writes, how to say with pride, Ivri Anochi, I am a Jew. And that essay was actually recently translated by Rabbi Nadi Helfgott in Chakira in the latest volume, volume 34. This was not the only public address to cause controversy for Rav Kook. It was not just the address that he gave memorializing Herzl. In 1925, 2 decades after this memorial address for Herzl, Rav Kook gave the invocation at the inauguration for Hebrew University. Among the thousands present were Rabbi Hertz of England, who was the chief rabbi, and the famed Israeli poets Nachman Bialik and Echad Ha'am. Following Rav Kook, Lord Balfour himself of the Balfour Declaration was actually the speaker who spoke after Rav Kook. Rav Kook invoked the phrase, Ki mi tzion teitzei Torah, Torah shall go forth from Zion, a connection that many felt conflated secular studies with the Hebrew University with the value of Torah. A misunderstanding Rav Kook painstakingly followed up with colleagues to clarify. Rav Yechatzkel Sarna later remarked to Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria that Rav Kook was only willing to speak at Hebrew University on the condition that they do not ever teach biblical criticism. Rav Kook was crestfallen when he later discovered that they did in fact begin teaching biblical criticism at Hebrew University. Rav Kook's student, and there's a whole lot we could talk about with his relationship with this student, Rav Yitzchak Huttner, who later became the Rosh Yeshiva in Chaim Berlin, but studied with Rav Kook, one of his close Talmidim, when he was living in Israel, studying in Slabodka, which had recently moved. He described Rav Kook's reaction upon learning that they began teaching biblical criticism at Hebrew University as disappointment, frustration, and piercing pain. Rav Huttner then self-reportedly, in a letter that he also wrote to Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, remarked to his teacher Rav Kook. Evidently, Rav Huttner said, and he said this reportedly directly to Rav Kook, a little bit of a sharp line, in addition to knowing the roots of one's soul, the Shorish HaNeshama, you must also know where the legs of the body actually stand. It's kind of like a biting criticism in a way of Rav Kook, that Rav Kook was able to see the Shorish of the Neshama, but you also have to know where the legs of the body actually stand. Rav Huttner's remark, carefully researched by Rav Eitam Henkin, Hashem Yikom Dama, one of the great scholars of the Jewish people who was tragically murdered by terrorists in Israel, in his book, Studies in Halacha and Rabbinic History, that was published by Koren, has a chapter entitled Rav Huttner's Testimony on Rav Kook and Hebrew University, which really details, you know, the different versions of what Rav Huttner actually said to Rav Kook and when he actually said it. But he really understands in many ways it cuts to the core of Rav Kook's strength and weaknesses. He was able to see past the exteriors and find the hidden holiness, the sparks of holiness of Zionism at the roots of people's souls. Yet he sometimes perhaps underestimated the intractability of the present position in secularity. Rav Kook saw the unspoken, but as hard as he may have tried, was not always able to move the location on which people actually stood. The ultimate reconciliation, and this of course brings us back to our parsha, the ultimate reconciliation between Yosef and Yehuda still waits. As Rav Kook explains in the memorial for Herzl, the union of Yosef and Yehuda, material and spiritual, universal and particular, will usher in the final redemption, each representing a different component of the realization of messianic times. Until then, we only have the ambiguous forgiveness of the Torah, an apology through action that does not yet fully mend the inner spirit of the heart. The hug and kiss, but distance still remains in the recesses of the souls between Yosef and his brothers. Yosef grants this material reconciliation through his action, as is Yosef's essence, this focus on material success, but the final reconciliation of the heart, the domain of Yehuda, still awaits. They could stand together, to paraphrase Rav Huttner's remark to Rav Kook, but the roots of their soul still await complete union. Perhaps, in the moment we live today, we see the place where they stand, and most importantly, the roots of the respective souls of the Jewish people slowly moving closer together. So thank you so much for listening to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha. To get the links to all the articles and books mentioned, be sure to subscribe to our weekly Substack, readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com. Thank you again to our sponsors, Janet and Lior Hode and family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. I am so grateful for their partnership and friendship. So thank you so much for listening, and keep reading each and every Shabbos.